Welcome to the Tech CEO Essentials Podcast. We are focused on the top areas that tech CEOs need to know. I'm your host, Tom Cooper, and this podcast is sponsored by my company, Bright Hill Group, where we believe that because people matter, we must lead them well. Today we're talking about HR. What are the essentials that a tech CEO needs to know how to be able to use human resources to grow their company? Today I have the privilege of interviewing Karen Usher from TPO Inc. Karen is the founder and chairman of TPO, and during her career, Karen's worked with hundreds of executive teams to help them improve their leadership and achieve their business goals through the people they employ. Her career combines change management, HR leadership, entrepreneurship, even founding her first of three companies in 1981. Today, Karen leads the firm's strategic planning and is practice leader for TPO's succession planning services. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So as we kind of jump right into it, what I'd like to know is, what are some keys to thinking strategically rather than tactically about HR? What does that even mean?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that people need to think about in terms of thinking strategically versus tactically about HR is to start to think about what their customers do. And that may sound like a funny place to start for human resources, but the customer of your business has something that they're trying to achieve and something they've come to you to help them achieve, to reach those goals. And understanding what that customer is trying to do drives what you produce for them, whether it's a service or a product. And that very element of driving your services and products is at the core
of what is strategic HR,
because you must then produce the people and the people systems to successfully produce your service or successfully develop your products in order to help your customers. There's a very virtuous chain between what your customers want and need and what you do for them and the people systems that you develop in order to make that happen. The more you can drive your people systems, the people you hire and how you manage them towards achieving those business objectives that you need to satisfy your customers, the more you'll be successful. And that's what strategic HR is all about. The tactical element of it is how you do that, what systems you use, and what choices you make within those systems. So the difference between strategy and tactics is the idea of linking your business and your business results to the people systems you develop and to the people that you hire. And then tactically, how do you implement that?
Well, okay, and I think I'm flummoxed, because as I think about how most business operates, there's so much focus on product and so much focus on development of the new thing, and even some vision for the customer, but not necessarily a link between how the product and the customer need is tied to the HR pieces.
It's absolutely true. I mean, this is something that I learned a long time ago when I talked to some of the most successful human capital people, human resource people that I'd ever known. And many of them had left human resources because they felt that in human resources, no matter what you asked about, the answer was a tactical answer. It had to be, because there was so much that was thrown at the human resources staff in terms of
their need to maintain paperwork,
maintain payroll, this, that, and the other thing. But as technology's evolved and removed some of the drudge of that work and allowed there to become a sort of a split between providing technology-supported HR services and then really looking at the human capital aspects of human resources, there's been room for human resource professionals to begin to look at different elements of the business. And those folks who many years ago left human resources and went into other elements of the business did so because they felt they could impact what people did to deliver on service or products for the company more effectively from outside HR than inside. And while that's changed now and starting to come around to you can have that kind of impact from inside human resources, it took that kind of exodus from the profession for a while to really stimulate the kind of change that's produced the ability to step back and the recognition that, you know, you are, as a business, nothing but your people, and maybe you have a bank account, and maybe you have a copyright or some kind of a trademark or something that, that carries your brand forward. But without the people involved, you can't deliver on any of that. You can't move any of that forward. And, you know, those products and services, the innovation that you're talking about, comes from the people. And setting up the systems to free people to do the work that you hired them for and to manage them effectively is a critical business element. And it's why you've heard so many times the story of HR wanting a seat at the table. It's just been that it's taken many years to figure out exactly how to get over the old baggage of the why we hate HR and actually begin to develop methods and systems to be able to contribute at that level, at the level of being at the table.
Well, and that's something that I think is a relevant point. I mean, in my experience, many times the HR folks are strong practitioners of the discipline, but not necessarily have a strong tie to the business.
It's true. And I think there's probably two reasons, well, maybe three reasons for that, but certainly two. I mean, one is there is, as with anything else, there are levels of experience and exposure and comfort and growth that people go through in their career and the kind of sophistication that we're talking about, the kind of the ability to be able to step back and see the forest for the trees as it pertains to people takes experience and maturity. And particularly in small businesses or smaller businesses, the price tag associated with that experience is pretty steep. And so it's hard to be able to buy in a mature enough human capital professional to really have that impact. So you have young people or inexperienced people who are what a company can afford. Secondly, there are some I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed, just like in any other function. I mean, you know, in sales, you keep your sales records up to, you know, your marketing and sales records up to date. In finance, you keep your books up to date. In HR, you keep your compliance materials up to date. We all have that material that's required that we have to do, and it's like homework. You hate to do it, but it has to be done. And when there are junior people brought in to run the function, that tends to be what they focus on because it's a critical element that needs to be done for the organization, or they get in trouble, just like they do if they get audited, or just like they do if they lose their sales records, or a member of the sales team takes off with your records. So, you know, that's two reasons, but I think probably the most significant reason of all is that for a long, long time, CEOs haven't demanded this. You know, I had an example the other day of somebody asking me why only 17% of their managers complete their performance reviews. And the answer is because you let 17% of your managers complete them and you don't demand that the other remaining 83% do. And it's a very similar topic to strategic HR. It's very important that that CEOs and senior leadership teams demand of their human capital professional that they behave at the same level that they hold themselves accountable to, whether they're in finance, marketing, IT, or whatever other functional area they may be responsible for.
Well, that's a really interesting point. And I just had a conversation in one of the interviews I've yet to publish is with a sales expert talking about sales. And he made the very same point about sales pipeline records. And he said, you know, you wouldn't let your accountant, you know, not keep the books up to date for finance. Why would you let your sales team get away with it? And it's the same thing you're talking about here, saying, wait a minute, we have certain expectations about behavior and performance in our organization, and you need to step up.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's an unusual time because most of the people who are now CEOs, regardless of their previous experience, whether they, in other words, whether they've been as chief executive before or this is their first time, their only experience with human resources in many cases is the old style. So it's almost like they don't even know what to ask for. I mean, as you grow in a, as a manager or a leader, you learn what to ask for from marketing. You learn what to ask for from IT. You learn what to ask for from sales. You learn what to ask for from finance. But you've always been told what you need to have by HR. And it's a very different perspective. It's like having an auditor run your financial planning. You don't.
Right.
They do different things. And so there this requires chief executives to become educated and to step back and take the time to think about the relationship between their customers and the people that they hire on their own team and their own staff, all the way down to front desk reception. And you know, they need to really understand that there is a very specific, very direct link between the person at the front desk and the customer 3,000 miles away
on a continent.
And they need to realize that almost everything they do with the people that work for them has direct and in many cases highly measurable impact on the customer relationship or the output that the customer expects. And that's what they need to start asking for.
Well, that's great. I was just going to dig in a little bit more with that. I mean, so if my expectation has been, for example, using your auditor example, that my auditor tells me you need to provide records for this, this, and this in order to be able for me to do my job properly. And that's my sort of expectation when it comes to human resources, that my HR person is going to say, look, you have certain compliance requirements and you need to produce these things.
Yeah.
If that's been my experience, what you're talking about is changing that relationship where I'm not being told what to do, but I'm saying, okay, here's what I need from you, or here's how I want to do this.
Yeah.
What are two or three things that a chief executive ought to be thinking about asking for from their HR person?
Well, I think they need to start by asking the human resources people, their team, and I would think you could actually say broaden this and say ask all your leadership team, because in many ways it's not just the responsibility of human resources. The following stuff is not just the responsibility of human resources. It's the responsibility of the entire organization in terms of the leadership team to be thinking about this. But specifically for human resources, they ought to be saying to their human capital staff, help me think about the relationship that our people have to our customers, number one. Start there. Start by saying, what is it we deliver to our customers? What do our customers buy our services or our products for? And what role do our people play in having an impact on the quality of that experience? And I'm not talking about just the customer service aspect, but the production or the delivery of the service. And actually explore that together as a leadership team with human resources taking the lead on that. And then I think they need to turn to their human capital professional as a single individual and say, how do our current human capital systems, our pay programs, our incentive programs, our benefits, our policies, our recognition programs support or impede the betterment of those service experiences for our customers? And you know, really come back and say, look, we pay people to do X, to achieve these kinds of things, is that helping our customers? Is it making a difference for our customers?
That's a really different perspective. I mean, you know, you think about companies that manufacture drills and drill bits, you know, and they're thinking about what does it take to get this to market and to improve on this or our intellectual property or whatever those pieces are. But customers don't really care about the drills or drill bits. They have a need for a hole. Right. So yeah. What you're talking about is really kind of looking at this from a customer perspective and saying, what is it that customers want to buy?
Yeah.
And
you know, and is it, do they buy the precision of our equipment? Do they buy the safety of our equipment? Do they buy the speed with which the hole is drilled? Do they buy the whole delivery experience? Do they buy it by the fact that there's reliability if they're working out in the boondocks, that they can be assured that if something breaks, that, you know, we'll deliver it, you know, the next day, a replacement? What is it they're buying from us? And how do our systems support making sure that happens?
Okay, so you've gone back a couple of times to the systems and supporting those things. And I think that's a great, you know, kind of next step. And really thinking about investment in their people, investment in HR, mm-hmm. How do they start to think about, if I'm a CEO, how am I going to start to think about that, keeping in mind that I want to be thinking about how I'm delivering services to my customers? How then do I choose to make investments in my people? What am I going to do differently, or how am I going to think about that?
Well, I think, you know, I assume you're talking about the investments in your broader set of people, or are you asking about, you know, how do I make investments in my human capital people?
No, I'm thinking the broader set, but
broader set. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to clarify because there was a moment in the question I thought you might be saying, "How do I find these kind of people?" So the answer in terms of how do you make investments is, you think about the framework that we just discussed, and you talk about it and design and ask your human capital person to design it, and then you seek input on whether the experience, seek data on whether the experience is in fact changing the way things play out, the way things work. Because quite frankly, you know, despite what people may think about their workforces, and regardless of what age we're talking about, whether we're talking about millennials or we're talking about the last baby boomers as they walk out the door, they join an organization to be part of a system or a network that has results. Those results may be more desired to be instant if you're a millennial, and you may be more patient if you're a baby boomer. But your desire is to be able to take, as a human being, to take your own knowledge, experience, apply it, see it have impact, and be appreciated for that. And if you understand, you know, I always say this, you know, if you're going to the beach in 3 months, you know that you need to start dieting so you can get into that bathing suit. It's knowing where you're going, knowing what it is you're being asked to contribute to the end result that's trying to be achieved, and then being queried, are you feeling like you can make the contribution? Do you have the tools and resources that you need? Do you feel you're being successful? And hey, by the way, so do we, and here's a pat on the back, and a thank you for that. And it's just the kind of pure common sense human interaction that, you know, unfortunately, very busy CEOs don't have time often to use within their own immediate sphere of direct reports and peers and colleagues, and certainly don't demand from the systems, their people systems. So they, you know, in addition to saying, how do these systems contribute, they ought to be asking for data about that. How do we know it's contributing? What do our people have to say about this? Do we see measurable results in the work we're trying to accomplish? You know, give me data to support this, and let me know that the things we intended to do are happening, and that the people that we have asked to participate in this feel engaged and feel that they can contribute. And that's really what a business is all about. A successful business. And if you look at and digest all of the statistics from anywhere you go, it all boils down to those couple of basic principles. Are we getting what we need? Are we getting what we need in a way that's liberating our workforce, maximizing its ability? And do people feel that we acknowledge, give them direction and acknowledge what they're doing?
Well, I think, you know, on that give them direction point, my perspective is that I think many times people don't know what their boss wants from them.
Mm-hmm. It's very common. We unfortunately, we are still deeply imbued in the culture that says, if you're a good widget maker, let's make you a supervisor. And
right.
then, and by the way, a year from now, we're going to chastise you for not being a good supervisor, despite the fact that we didn't give you any tools to do the job. I think it is something to remember. There are very few people who are born as innate managers and supervisors. And the reason most CEOs get to where they are is that they were either very lucky in having someone mentor them, or in combination, they have some degrees of innate people skills. It's remembering back that it's important to have the fundamentals in place at every level. Again, you don't take somebody who's a bookkeeper and make them your financial planner in the next week. They have to go through a series of experiences and training. And we do that with every function. But we don't do that well when we ask people to step aside from doing something or making something and actually start leading people. And we do a very poor job of managing the process of converting them from doers to leaders. And that's another critical element that chief executives can demand. And I'm not talking about bog standard training. I'm not talking about off the shelf or online or somebody who comes in and does 12 one-hour sessions over the course of a year with maybe a little homework. I'm talking about developing as a critical people system, one of the most critical people systems, a process of developing the management skills and experience, and then holding managers accountable for the experience you're asking them to take. It's very interesting to me to see people being promoted into management roles, being given training, and then not being held accountable. It's important that you guide the performance of your people. Here's how to do it, and only 17% of you only really have to because you feel you must or something. And it's crazy. If you are promoted as a manager and you're given the training to do performance review, then you must be held accountable for doing it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really good point. I just posted a blog post a couple of days ago on why your training budget is a waste of money.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to this concept that you bring up, that it's a process. It's not an event. I don't send you to training and fix you. That presumes you're broken, right? I send you, what I want to do is I want to equip you over time. That leadership develops daily, not in a day. And so how do you begin to start to take that? And part of that is exactly your point, accountability. How do you hold people accountable? And that's one of the examples I gave in the blog post is I had a woman come to me and said she wanted training. She hadn't actually implemented anything from the last time I paid for training.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not going to pay for more training if you're not going to use this stuff.
Well, and I would argue that, you're as much as fault, not knowing any of the other, unencumbered with the facts, I would say that you're probably as accountable as she is, because how did you hold her accountable?
Absolutely.
To implementing that training?
Absolutely. It makes me feel good that I took the blame. I put it in the blog post. It's my fault. I didn't tell her what I wanted, right?
Well, and you didn't say to her, what did you learn? How are we going to practice that? When should you come to me if you have questions? How will I know this is beginning to embed? This is what we'll recognize together as success. And it doesn't require anything but 5 minutes once a week. If what we're learning to do, for example, is to give constructive feedback to the employees who work for us, once a week I can stick my head in the office of my new junior manager and say, hey, what opportunities did you have last week, or do you think you might have this week to give some constructive feedback? How are you going to do it, or how did it go? What was the response to the person? What did you say? Here are some thoughts about how you could have done that more effectively. It's a 5-minute conversation. And you do that for a month, and they know how to give constructive feedback.
That's an interesting point. And I think to your point, most of us who are in leadership positions were not mentored in that way, and were not told and held accountable, told that we needed to do it, and then held accountable to do it. So I think
it's a really interesting period of time, because there are some chronic broken pieces to human resources and to management in general, which I have a hard time sometimes distinguishing between the two elements. Human capital management and management in general, I'm not so sure where the real distinction, where the real cutoff point of one and the other lies. I mean, human resources or the old personnel files, records, compliance, data, that kind of stuff, that's pretty easy to chunk out. But the other two really commingle. And so we're in a period of time where some of the old bad habits, the traditional problems with management, are still prevalent. Yet we're beginning to realize that there's such a huge statistically verified link between how we manage our humans and the results we get for our companies. And there's data all over the place, and there has been now for about 15 years. And we're just as a profession coming to grips with sort of pulling back the wool and stopping, you know, somebody described it the other day as stop telling the lies of human resources. You can fix everything quickly by doing a good performance review tool. You know, that there's really some fundamental problems with how we pass on the mantle of management that need to be fixed, and that many of the chronic issues around human resources can vanish simply by fixing that one element. And then that liberates the time to begin to look at these newer, more impactful aspects of the work that link to the customer and link to the changes in a business. And I think that's the real fundamental shift that's happening in human resources. And you know, big companies have, particularly, you know, sort of award-winning big companies, and particularly a lot of the new modern companies like Google and, you know, some of the others that are quoted all the time, are aware of that at least semi-consciously and are deliberate in capturing that. But even small companies can do that, because the that part of the mantle of human resources really rests with the chief executive. It is not the job of a 5-year experienced human resources manager or human resources, you know, in whatever assistant, whatever they're called these days, to really carry that mantle forward in a small business. It's really the chief executive's job. And they should be spending, you know, a huge portion of their day dealing with and working with their most important asset. And, you know, the question is, are they setting themselves up to spend the right kind of 75% of their day on that versus the wrong kind? If they're putting out fires, if they're ameliorating schoolyard fights, if they're you know, having to redeal with paperwork that should have been filed or wasn't filed, etc., that's the wrong kind of, or bad hires or whatever, that's the wrong kind of 75% of their time. But if they are able to ask their leadership team these fundamental questions about how the work that their resource, in this case a human resource, how that work impacts the outcome of the company or their company's customers, that's the right kind of time. And they should be spending 75% to 80% of that, of their time on that, because quite frankly, that's their biggest thing. And you can ask any chief executive what the top 5 or 6 things that are on their mind, and if 80% of them aren't tied directly to people in one way or another, I'll fund your next 6 interviews.
Well, gosh, this has been really great stuff, and I would love to dig in deeper with you. I can't believe that the time has passed so quickly already, but this, I think, has been some really good content that is it kind of shakes up some thinking, and I think that's really powerful, and I appreciate your contributions here. So now, if folks want to get in touch with you, your firm really helps organizations with finding the right ways to implement some of these ideas, right?
Correct. We do it. We we practice our human resources in this sort of next generation kind of way. Much of our work, particularly in complex issues like this, is research driven. We work to identify exactly what business result you are attempting to impact and work backwards from that point to develop the systems to support that. But we work at that level even when we are in the more tactical mode of helping smaller businesses simply get their feet underneath them for the first time about having human resources programs. So we tend, even if we're starting with a company that has no systems of any kind and has never had a human resources presence or a professional human resources presence, to really start to ask those questions at the very early stages of the relationship, even though we may be putting in those fundamental building blocks of the accounting system, you know, equivalent of the sure. accounting system or the Salesforce.com system, you know, the equivalent of that in our world. We still ask about that because there are elements of what it is you're trying to achieve that can be integrated even into the most basic parts of the human capital suite.
Well, that's terrific. And so I think the best way to get more information about what you do is your website, right? TPO-inc.com, right?
That's it.
Perfect. Well, Karen, thank you very much for joining us today. For our listeners, join us next time for more Tech CEO Essentials. We've got other exciting topics coming up, talking about communications and accounting and legal and more. It's great stuff. I'm excited about it. For Bright Hill Group, this is Tom Cooper signing off.